My name's Doug Reed, and this is Biblical Basis for Raising Children. So let me know about you guys. Somebody tell me what ages your kids are. 6 and 2. 4 and 5. 8, 6, and 15 months. Ooh. 5, 3, and 1. Anybody else? 4 and 8. So young kids. -6 months. That's wonderful. I hope this is going to be helpful. That's my prayers. This would be helpful to you guys. I will say this. You really need to take a class. And when I say take a class, most child-rearing classes last anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. And I have resources on my PowerPoint. Unfortunately, if you try, and they're on the handout, but if you try to type them in, there's so many words that you probably won't get it typed in right. It'll be frustrating. But I have my email. If you'll just email me, I'll email you all my stuff plus some bonus things my wife wanted me to print off. And I'm like, man, I'm already printing off so much. I think I'll just offer that to them if they email me. So if you're like me, you'll get home and kind of forget about stuff. As far as like trying to follow through because you get busy with life. We're all really busy. But if you can remember to do that, even if it's a month or two later, email me and I'll email you all this stuff. And there's a... Or you could Google some of it, too, and probably find it. So I would encourage you to get into a class, though. And a matter of fact, Doris and I, when we had kids, we wanted to get into a class, and there were no classes. There were no classes. So we sort of invented our own class, and Rennie was living in Little Rock at that time. Rennie, you want to tell that kind of shortened version of that story? Because you didn't have to do this.
We created a version of this one. We were looking for an outreach method to get Bible studies going and reach people. And we thought, we had heard about a course in the city that was adjacent to ours, about 20 miles away.
Yeah, I think so.
So Doug and Doris said, hey, why don't we go to this child rearing class? We'll get the information and use that as an opportunity to reach out to people and when you need some Bible studies.
And some of it was for reach out for me. I mean, I had little kids, and so I had a real use for it. Rennie's kids were pretty much grown.
My kids were about grown and out of the house. So we go to this thing, and it's good. It's really good. Third week into this, I said to my wife, this isn't for outreach. I personally need this because I missed some things when my kids were growing up, and I need to go back and learn to read Karen. And that's the speech that I give when I used to do these classes. Thanks to Doug. Otherwise, I probably would have never thought about doing it. It turned out to be quite a life changer for us and for our family.
Well, we sure appreciate you guys helping us with that because there wasn't a class, so... Don't be discouraged if there's not a class. Find some kind of curriculum you trust and find a partner, find a mentor, find somebody to do it with you. And that's what we did. It was life-changing. Still made lots of mistakes, so I'll talk about those. So that's my wife, and it's not that good of resolution, but her name's Doris, and that is a political sign. I am a justice of the peace for Pulaski County, Arkansas, which is the largest county in Arkansas. I've done that for 8 years, and I just got reelected. We have to get reelected every 2 years, and I live in a very conservative area of Little Rock, which there's not very many of those. It's a pretty dysfunctional city, but I've not had that many opponents usually, and I won pretty handily this last time. So we took a picture for a postcard I was going to send out, and so that's. My wife that I met in Navigator Ministry at Fayetteville, Arkansas, University of Arkansas. We got married, and the Campus Crusade people called us the Never Daters. And my wife took that serious. She wasn't planning on ever getting married. I had to really work hard. So her name's Doris. We do ministry together. We do everything we can together. And that's mainly because of Rennie and Pat Austin. They said, you know, your kids are going to draw you apart. You need to do as much as you can together. And I would encourage you guys to do things with your wife. Do ministry with your wife. Do everything you can with your wife. It's been a real... right now, her and I are the song leaders for a small Baptist church. We are just having the time of our life there. I have 5 children. They're all adults or young adults. We'll talk about what that means in a minute. My oldest one's right there. That's Damaris. She's 22. She's in a graduate program in Southern Illinois University. She's a growing Christian and does ministry tries to do ministry. My next born is Lydia. That's her. She's 20. She's in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I already knew college. And another thing you need to do as you're raising your kids, really try to get to know them. I already knew she wasn't a college person, but she wanted to try it, and she didn't make it. Now, the good side of that is we kind of knew some things that she could do, and so she's getting her personal training license, which is what she should have done in the first place. And so that's what she's working on right now, is her personal trainer's license, so she can work with people in the gym on losing weight. And she's really, I mean, when we go out, when she comes to the house and we go out and eat, she goes, oh, I can't eat that. So she's real strict on her diet, into that stuff. So that's Dawson Crawford Reed. He was named after Dawson Trotman and John Crawford. He's been to this conference quite a few times. He just started college this year at College of the Ozarks in Branson and didn't feel like he could come. He has 18 hours, plus they have to work 15 hours a week. Mary Beth, and he's 19 right now. Mary Beth is 17, 11th grade, and she's my little self-starter ministry person. I wouldn't have never thought it when she was growing up. But she's been to Slovakia by herself. She didn't want to go with the church. She's like, I want to find some place I can go by myself. And she did it all on her own. I mean, I was skeptical. I'm like, I just don't know, Mary Beth. I said, if you can raise the $5,000 to do it, then I'll support it. And she raised more than she needed. So she's trying to go again this year. She goes to an English camp over there. And she's involved in several Bible studies. I mean, I honestly can't keep up with her. And then my youngest, my video gamer, that's Daniel. He loves video games. He's a homebody. He loves to stay home. He'll be old enough to come next year. I don't know if I'll get him out of the house or not. I guess I'll bring the Xbox up here maybe. So, anyway, great family. That's at Silver Dollar City in Branson. We went there a lot, and that's in front of there's a water wheel as you enter. So I think that was come on, let's hurry and get the picture up. We're ready to go. That's my kids, and my two youngest ones are in 9th and 11th. That's Mary Beth and Daniel. I think that's pretty much my background. I think I've already told you most of that. I just wanted to be sure you guys knew who I was. And I would say the majority of my children are living the Christian life, not all of them. There's been a few bumps along the way, and we might talk about that later. And if you guys have any questions, you know, pop up. I wasn't planning on this being a total lecture, and I do have a place for questions at the end, but if you have a question while we're on it, on a subject, let me know. All right, this next is just for fun. This is what it's like to raise kids. This is actually an old Super Bowl commercial, so it's pretty funny. If you can imagine what it's like to raise young kids, if I can get it to work.
This man right here is my great-grandfather. He's the first cat herder in our family.
Herding cats? Don't let anybody tell you it's easy.
Anybody can herd cattle. Holding together 10,000 half-wild short hairs, well, that's another thing altogether.
Being a cat herder is probably about the toughest thing I think I've ever done.
I got this one this morning, right here. And if you look at his face, it's just ripped to shreds, you know?
You see the movies, you hear the stories. I'm living a dream. Not everyone can do what we do.
I wouldn't do nothing else.
It ain't an easy job, but when you bring a herd into town and you ain't lost a one of them, ain't a feeling like it in the world.
EDS, managing the complexities of the digital economy.
Yeah, I think there's some kind of investment company anyway. I saw that, I'm like, that is what it's like to raise young children sometimes, herding cats. So anyway, just for fun, let's talk about the foundation. Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. So the best thing you can do for your kids is have a good marriage, and that takes work. That's not easy. Some things that the child parenting class I took had some good ideas, I thought. One of them was called couch time, and that's a time every day, and you need to do it in front of your kids. Don't do it after they go to bed, because they need to see you interact with your wife. So here's a practical application. And, of course, you have to talk to your wife and get her on board. But I'm sure she would love couch time, and that's where you tell the kids, okay, Mommy and I are going to now have couch time, and you guys go play and whatever, but please don't interrupt us the next 20, 30, 15 minutes, however long you're going to do it. You basically sit down and talk about your day, and wives love that. They love communication. My wife and I never did it on the couch. My wife's a worker, and so we were always in the kitchen, and she was doing things, and we would talk about our day. But do that in front of your kids, and it'll be good for your marriage. Getaways, my wife and I have always, we've always got done at least yearly getaways. It costs money, but it's worth it. And then dates, if you can go on dates. And my wife does not like to spend money. And I like to go out and eat. So sometimes we have to compromise and we'll go do some, you know, she likes to hike around and that kind of thing. So find something you both are interested in and go do it. Maybe it is going to eat out. Just get away. Those are just some ideas. But one philosophical idea, and this bottom slide here is philosophical. Again, it was from the parenting class we took, and I liked it because it's just not the way the world defines things. But when you get married, you become a family. You do not have to have kids to be a family. When Adam and Eve were in the garden, he pronounced them man and wife. And so that's something to remember. It's not, I got to have kids to be a family. You're a family now, and kids are a welcome addition to the family. Again, if you take a parenting class, it helps. So I would encourage you to do that, and I have resources you can look at. So work on your marriage. That's the foundation of your child rearing, is a good marriage. And I know in this day and age that's not easy, and then there may be some single parents in here, and then, you know, God's going to have to be your other partner in that if that's the case. So let me talk about children versus sons and daughters, and we're going to talk about this. I do have a handout with a whole bunch of writing on it. We're going to read through some of it because I've found when I go to a workshop and somebody gives me a handout usually it'll go in a drawer and I'll never read it again. We're not going to read all this, but we're going to read some of it out loud. But I grew up in an era where if you did something wrong and you were 18 years old, your dad would still spank you. Let's look up two verses on this to kind of define children versus sons and daughters. By the way, one big influence in my life on child rearing besides the parenting class I took was John Mann, who used to come here a lot and he would teach on parenting. And this is from his stuff, is the difference between children and sons and daughters. Proverbs 23:13, does anybody have that verse?
Not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die.
All right, so do not withhold discipline from a child, and it talks about a rod. We're going to talk about that later. But let's compare that to 27:22, Proverbs 27:22. Though you pound a fool in mortar with pestle along with crushed grain, yet his folly will not depart from him. So the first verse says that a rod removes foolishness. The second one says it doesn't. And that's the reason we resist the idea of using the rod on teens and adults, because it doesn't remove foolishness anymore. If you hit an older person, they usually will leave your house and not come back. So that's the reason we want to be sure we separate the idea between children and sons and daughters. So the question is, when does a person become adult? And I like John Mann's take on this. He basically says that the Bible leaves that up to the culture. And in our culture, basically when a young man or woman goes through puberty, which is usually about 12 years old, 12 or 13, then childhood's pretty much over and they're a young adult and we need to transition into some other kind of discipline. Does that make sense? It just breaks my heart. And I'm a school teacher. I forgot to tell y'all what else I do. The JP thing's just a part-time job. I've taught high school for 20 plus years at a private school in Little Rock. Teach physics. And there was a kid this year that was a faculty member's son, and he made a C in my class, and his dad actually said, "Oh, I spank him." And I was just like, yeah, I mean, this kid can grow a beard. He's like an 11th grader. I mean, if he doesn't shave, he grows a beard. I mean, that's just, that breaks my heart, that kind of stuff. So I'm just making a separation between sons and daughters and how you treat them, and children and how you treat them as far as discipline. That's one distinguishing mark I want to make. And again, I think in our culture, 12, 13, they become young adults, and then we transition to some other kind of discipline. It's not that you don't discipline, you just don't use the rod. All right, I teach a class every Wednesday in our church, and half the time I get my quiet times where I get my stuff to teach on. And so I was asked to teach this class, and I wasn't sure I wanted to. So I prayed about it, and I think the next day in quiet time, God gave me these verses. And I thought, wow, that kind of fits what I've been teaching at church, and it fits this child-rearing class. So if everybody will turn to Galatians 3, 23 to 26, and then we're going to read on over into Galatians 4, 1 through 5. And that's, y'all that may be new to the faith, that's near the back of the Bible in the New Testament. You get to the maps or Revelation, you've gone too far. But it's a really small book. It's not that easy to find. And I'll just read this one out loud. One thing I've been focused on in our little Baptist church is our position in Christ. And the gentleman that spoke on Thursday night, if you were here, he talked about that we're at the right hand of God. So when you become a Christian, you're at the right hand of God. And there's a whole bunch of verses that tell us our position in Christ. And that we're not like we used to be. And we're not in the same position we used to be, so we shouldn't act like it. And so this is an interesting verse that kind of goes along with that, because Paul's trying to teach the Galatians about the law versus grace. Let me read it. But before faith came, we were kept in custody under the law, being shut up to faith, which was later to be revealed. Therefore, the law has become our tutor to lead us to Christ, that we may be justified by faith. But now that faith has come, we are no longer under a tutor. For you are all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. Now we're going to skip to chapter 4. Now I say, as long as the heir is a child, he does not differ at all from a slave, although he is owner of everything. But he is under guardians and managers until the day set by the Father. So also we, while we were children, were held in bondage under the elemental things of the world. But when the fullness of time came, God sent forth his Son, born of a woman, under the law, in order that he might redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. It's interesting that when he talks about the grace period we're in, he talks about adoption as sons. The law, he talked about us as children. And so that kind of fit what I was thinking about. And so I called Mike Thomas back. He's like, okay, I'll do it. So let's talk about that. If you look at those verses, according to those verses, people come to Christ because of the law. What does that mean? Well, what's one thing we have to know before we can come to Christ? What do we have to know? We're sinners. And how do we know that? We have to know something about the law and that we can't keep it. When we figure that out, then that leads us to faith in Christ Jesus and we become sons and daughters. So I thought that was interesting when it comes to talking about children versus sons and daughters. So the idea is the law leads us to faith in Christ. It's our tutor. And so if we apply that to child rearing for young children, it's kind of an interesting thought when we look at these next set of verses, which we've already quoted one of them. Here's my idea from that. For a child, there must be law and the punishment that comes from breaking the law. The rod is what the Bible talks about in Proverbs. The Bible assures us for children that this will drive out foolishness. If they're children, that it will drive out foolishness. Proverbs 22:15.
Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him.
Yeah, so foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. We're going to make some definitions here in a minute. Let's keep going, though, and finish these verses. Proverbs 23:13-14. Anybody have that one?
Do not withhold discipline, child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. If you strike him with a rod, you will save his soul from Sheol.
All right, and the word Sheol just means death. That's where, in the Old Testament, when people died, they didn't go to heaven or hell. They went to a place called Sheol, as far as we can tell. That's what it's talking about. You'll deliver his soul from death. Proverbs 29:15.
The rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother.
Yeah, so the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. It's talking about a rod there. And if you look that up in the Hebrew language that it was translated from, that just means a stick. So, practical idea. By the way, let me say something. I called the three main states that I thought people were from at this conference. I didn't call all of them. The states make the laws on family and children. And so I just called the Arkansas Department of Child Protective Services. I called the Texas department, and I called the Oklahoma department. Those are the three I called. And I just told them I was sort of a pastor person. I'm not a pastor, but I told them I'm sort of a pastor person. And I just want to know what it is before I tell anybody anything. And I said, is it against the law in your state to spank children? And all of them said no. Now, Arkansas, Kristen was this bubbly, happy little girl. And she goes, oh, give me your address and I'll send you a bunch. And she sent me all this information. And then the lady in Oklahoma was also named Kristen. And she was bubbly and happy. And then the person from Texas, I don't know what her deal was, but she said, we don't have a law on that, but you better check the family law something, something. And I'm like, well, just tell me, is there a law where people are going to put in jail if they spank their kids? So there's not. But I talked to my wife about it, and I'm going to define some things in a minute. But be careful about disciplining your kids in public. Because there are crazy people out there that hate the Bible and don't like anything to do with it. And if they see that and they call protective services, even though you've done nothing illegal, they have to open up a case. They have to come to your house. If you don't let them in, they go get a warrant from a judge, and it's just a mess. So and Doris and I talked about this. Basically, I think we kind of blew it in that area because we'd end up just not disciplining them because we didn't want to do it in public when we should have taken them to, you know, okay, so you're in the grocery store and you got a bunch of groceries and then they misbehave in some way. We should have taken them to the car and disciplined them, and sometimes we didn't. So there's mistakes I made along the way, and that's one of them that we decided. So just be careful about anything in public.
Do you have any recommendations for that?
I think we decided, first of all, the best thing is if one parent would stay home and just keep the kids at home. That would probably be easiest, because it is a big deal to leave and have to go out. But if you have them in the store and they misbehave, I would just take them out. It's kind of a pain to do that. Yes, sir.
At what age did you start?
I'll talk about that in a minute. You know, that's probably... a lot of our discipline is cultural, sort of. I mean, God gives us guidelines, but he doesn't give us, like, black and white, like, at this age you should start. I'll talk about that. There's some personal notes I have where we're going to read through some of the handouts. Yes, sir.
One other thing along that line, not only can you do it in the car, make it the younger children, the sooner after the offense the discipline occurs, the easier for it is for them to put it together. As they get older, you can defer it until you get home.
Yeah, so.
And children know that if they are outside the boundaries, then there's going to be repercussions later on. As they get older, those things can be different. It's not a problem. Smaller kids, the sooner the better, but in a parking lot, you're still taking a pretty big chance.
I mean, we live in a tougher world than we used to live in. Where,
yeah,
if you can get, they do have those bathrooms where you lock the door now in a lot of places. But anyway, just be careful. It's not against the law, but like I say, people turn you in and they've got the hotline. They've got to come investigate, and you don't want to be in that situation. Yes, sir.
When I first moved to Oklahoma, I was in a grocery store that father kept pulling the candy out of the kid's pocket, and after they got the checkout line, he did it again, and I was right behind him and gave him a swat, and my face of my grocery got shot. They had him arrested, mm-hmm. And was calling the mom and saying, either come get your child, or it's going to child protection.
Yeah, so it's crazy. Even though they say it's not against the law, just, you know, be careful what you do. So the rod is a stick, all right? So what does that mean? Well, my wife and I, we decided to use a wooden spoon. And the bottom is the perfect place because that there's no vital organs there. As far as I can tell, I think God gave it to us so we could spank our kids. And one thing that needs to happen is it needs to hurt when you spank them. I think when I started out, I'm kind of a more gentle dad. And I think I didn't make it hurt on some of my kids. And it does need to hurt when you spank them. What age do you start at? You know, I think that is so... there are some things on child rearing, it's like herding cats. It's so hard to figure out, but there comes a time. I mean, I wouldn't say before two, but some kids maybe. But usually you can tell, especially the mom, when they start bowing up on you.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah, so I'd have to leave that up to you. You'll have to figure that out. Just remember, though, when you spank, and we're going to talk a little bit more here in a second. I got another bullet point up here. It needs to hurt, and I would just use the bottom, and I would use a wooden spoon because that's a rod, and a rod drives out foolishness. That's what the Bible promises us. And children, the rod drives out foolishness. Now, I know in our culture there's all the timeout stuff. That probably could be used for some things, but there's some things that I think that you need to spank for, at least according to the Bible, if you want to drive out foolishness. Some people, that's all they use is timeout, and I get those kids as high schoolers, and I can tell which ones they are. And they're not well disciplined in themselves, and they're... I'd be careful about timeout for everything. I would use a rod. One thing, as your children, you as the father, your children need to know how to please you, and they need to know what the rules are. So when you're making rules, and you need to do this with your wife, and you're going to come up with rules that maybe your time out, and then rules that are, I mean, this gets a spanking, make them real clear so your kids know, so they're not walking on eggshells. I don't know when I'm going to get a spanking. I hadn't figured it out. Make them real clear. You know, when they're really little and they can't talk yet, I mean, you just need to get down face to face with them, and we're going to talk about how to talk to them in just a minute. But they'll figure it out. But when they get a little older to communicate, be sure they understand the rules and which ones. So be sure you understand the rules. One more thing on the word punishment. I use the word punishment. That's not really what we're doing when we're raising kids. I think a lot of us were, I can't speak for you, but my generation, we were raised by angry parents. Like that's how they disciplined, was out of anger. And so we tend to kind of operate out of the mode that we were raised in. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but this is a very interesting word study. Acts 22:5 versus Hebrews 12:5. Hebrews 12:5 says, "And have you forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him." A lot of Christians, and I don't think it's just American culture. There's a guy named Andre from Madagascar that I'm very involved with, and he has come up with a parenting class over there, and he finds the same thing we find over here. Because if you were raised by angry, they're not angry all the time, but when they discipline you, they're angry. You know, they're just like, what in the world? And then you tend to put that on God. And that word discipline is not talking about an angry God disciplining you. And here's how we're going to show that. The Greek word in Hebrews is the Strong's number 3809, which is this one right here. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Well, let's look in Acts 22:3, because the same word, slight variation of it, is in Acts 22:3. This is Paul talking. "I am a Jew born in Tarsus of Cilicia, but brought up in this city, educated under Gamaliel." The word educated is the same word discipline. I'm a school teacher, have been for quite a while. Part of education is discipline, and I don't mean like discipline like we're thinking about it, but the discipline of giving homework, doing the homework, holding people accountable for their learning. That's part of discipline. I think my whole idea here is don't think of discipline as an angry event. It's not. It's an educational event, which for young children includes some pain through use of the rod. For older kids, it doesn't include the rod. It includes other things that help them. But discipline is just the word educate, and God wants to educate us. Yes, sir.
Being sure that you explain why.
Yes. One thing in the parenting class we took that they were big on was the moral reason why. Like if you tell a kid, don't run in church, well, if you put up a law, then what does the New Testament tell us the law makes us do in Romans 8? Paul says it made him covet more. When he found out about the law, don't covet, guess what it made him want to do? So you tell a kid don't run and you don't tell them why, well, they're just now tempted even more to run. If you explain the moral reason why don't we want kids to run in church? Well, there's older people with canes. There's people that are trying to worship. There's all kinds of reasons not to run in church, but it has to do with loving other people. And that helps if you explain the moral reason why when you're disciplining them. Yes, sir.
Sometimes it feels a lot like, I talked to my son, he's 4 years old, about why I'm doing things. Sometimes it just
I know, but I think in the end it really does work. It just is you know, I just started banjo lessons. I'm a musician, but I was taking my kids to take some music lessons, my two younger ones, and I saw banjo, like, ooh, Doris, do you think I could take banjo lessons? I am playing like 100 times slower than Scruggs, if you know anything about bluegrass music and Earl Scruggs and the Real Fast. I can't even tell what the music is, but through the discipline of practicing, the other day my wife from the kitchen goes, good job, you played faster and you didn't mess up. I'm like, I still can't tell what I'm playing. So I think repetition in discipline also for younger kids, just the repetition of hearing it over and over, this is why we don't do it, and you know, if you do this, you get a spank. Does that make sense? I think that helps. All right, this next part, I don't know if I'm going to read the whole thing, but it is sort of, James 1:20 says, the anger of man does not accomplish the righteousness of God. And so in this blank right here, anger wounds the heart. Something Andre in Madagascar is finding is when he goes into ministry and helps people, their culture is such that there's a bunch of wounded people, and he finds he can't help them and can't get them to help others unless he takes them through this healing process, getting over their wounding. One way we wound people, if you'll take out your handout. Now, you can get this book totally free off Google Documents. But you can get this book totally free. It's called Hints on Child Training. And I'm just going to read this out loud. It's called Scolding is Never in Order. Scolding. See, when I grew up, scolding was how parents tried to control you. And really, you are trying to control your children, but you're really trying to discipline them and educate them so they can, on their own, control themselves. By the way, when I copied and pasted this, it didn't copy the periods. So when you're reading this, it's like, oh, I just finished a sentence. Many a father who will not strike his child feels free to scold him, and a scolding mother is always deemed the severest and most unjust of mothers. Yet while it is sometimes right to strike a child, it is never right to scold one. Scolding is, in fact, never in order in dealing with a child or in any other duty in life. To scold is to assail or revile with boisterous speech. The word itself seems to have a primary meaning akin to that of barking or howling. From its earliest use, the term scolding has borne a bad reputation. In common law, a common scold is a public nuisance against which the civil authorities may be invoked by the disturbed neighbor. This is a fact at the present time as it was a fact in days of old. This was written in 1893, by the way. This is an old book. Scolding is an expression of a bad spirit and a loss of temper. This is truly the case when a lovely mother scolds her child for breaking his playthings willfully or soiling his third dress forenoon by playing in the gutter, which he was forbidden to approach, as when one apple woman yells out her abuse of another apple woman in a street corner. In either case, the essence of scolding is in the multiplication of hot words, an expression of strong feeling that, while eminently natural, ought to be held in better control. And one of the fruits of the Spirit is self-control. My wife and I struggled with this, and we kind of made a pact with each other that when we would start that, we would come to tell the other, put our hand on the other, and it's like, let's back away for a little bit, or let me deal with it. Let me skip down to this training a dog. This is an interesting observation the guy made. It's down on the right-hand side. It says, Mr. Hammond's admirable work on dog training, already referred to in these pages, says on this very point to the dog trainer, you must keep perfectly cool and must suffer no sign of any anger or impatience, for if you cannot control your temper, you are not the one to train the dog. Do not allow yourself, this instructor, under any circumstance, to speak to your pupil, that's the dog, in anything but an ordinary tone of voice. And recognizing the difficulties of the case, he adds, exercise an unworried patience, and if at any time you find the strain upon your nerves growing a little tense, leave him at once and wait until you are perfectly calm before resuming the lesson. That's training a dog. A dog trainer said that. I think it's imperative that we learn, you know, let God work on our wounds and our past so that we can raise our children right. Let me skip over to the end. I thought it was kind of good. just halfway down on the left-hand side. There are times indeed when words may be multiplied to advantage in explaining to a child the nature and consequences of his offense. So he's not saying you can't talk to him and the reasons why he should do differently in the future. But such words should always be spoken in gentleness and in self-controlled earnestness. Scolding rapidly spoken, censure and protest in the exhibit of strong feelings is never in order as a means of training and directing a child. Most parents, even the gentler and kinder parents, scold their children more or less. Rarely can a child say, "My parents never scold me." Many a child is well trained in spite of his being scolded. Many a parent is a good parent, notwithstanding the fact that he scolds his children. But no child is ever helped or benefited by any scolding that he receives. And no parent ever helps or benefits his child by means of a scolding. Scolding is not always ruinous, but it is always out of place. So he's not saying you're going to ruin your kids, but it just doesn't help. If indeed scolding has any good effect, and all that affects is on the scolder and not the scolded. Scolding is the outburst of strong feeling that struggles for the mastery under the pressure of some outside provocation. It never benefits the one against whom it is directed, nor yet those who are its outside observers. However, it may give physical relief to the one who indulges in it. If therefore scolding is an unavoidable necessity on the part of any parent, let that parent at once be shut himself or herself up all alone in a room where the scolding can be indulged in without harming anyone. Isn't that good? Anyway, that book is, I think this is on like page 271. It's kind of a long book, but I remember having this book in our home. I think we probably gotten rid of it, but it's free on Google Docs. You can get the whole book and download it. That might be something you want to look at, hints on child training. So just be careful about anger and don't let that get in your child training because it just wounds people. And if they're wounded, they got to get healed before they can help other people. And let's talk about some other ideas. One thing I want to talk about, I think, and this is on Andre from Madagascar, one thing he points out. So if you want to get this out, we'll look at it real quick. Well, I won't read all of it, but Roman numeral 1 is the value of the children. Now, this is translated from his language. He translated it. He's not a native English speaker, although he came over here and was over here for 2 or 3 years. It kind of reads funny sometimes. That's because he translated it. The value of the children, they are so precious to us and God, which is true, and he gives some verses. And then number 2, the most important for raising children is to teach them obedience. That is the key. Let me read you a scripture from 1 Samuel 3:1-9, which is actually pretty amazing. And it doesn't have anything to do with child rearing, but it's a good example. So if you want to turn there, 1 Samuel 3:1-9. Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord before Eli, and word from the Lord was rare in those days. Visions were infrequent. It happened at that time as Eli was lying down in his place, so it's nighttime, they're going to bed. Now his eyesight had begun to grow dim and he could not see well. And the lamp of God had not yet gone out. And Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was. Samuel was a young child at this time. That the Lord called Samuel and said, and Samuel said, "Here I am." Then he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I did not call you. Lie down again." So he went and lay down. The Lord called yet again, "Samuel." So Samuel rose and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he answered, "I did not call you, my son. Lie down again." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, nor had the word of the Lord yet been revealed to him. So the Lord called Samuel again for the third time, "Samuel." And he arose and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." Then Eli discerned that the Lord was calling the boy. Now, the reason I read that, how many times did Samuel get called? And he happily, obediently came to Eli and said, "Here I am." Most kids in our culture that aren't disciplined very well would be going, "What do you want now?" But he was, "Here I am." That just illustrates first-time obedience. And some of your kids are going to be easy with that. Like my firstborn was a breeze. My secondborn was hard. And she's still taking some hard knocks. Don't know if I persevered enough with her to get her to do first-time obedience. But not only first-time obedience, but happy first-time obedience. I mean, you're going to have to do a lot of praying with your wife. That part's really difficult, is to get first-time obedience from your kids, because it takes a lot of work and a lot of consistency. but it is possible. One thing I would say is first-time obedience. Psalms 127:3 says, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. So children are a gift from the Lord. First thing we need to look at our children is a gift. But it's interesting, that word gift. The word gift actually means inheritance or possession or property or inheritance. If you guys get an inheritance, is there anything that you need to do about it? Or do you just like, okay. I mean, tax-wise, do you need to do anything? Is there any responsibility in inheritance? There is definitely responsibility in inheritance. You got things you got to do with the government. You got to take care of it. So one pastor one time said, children are an assignment from the Lord, is what he said. And for me, a teacher, I'm like, that makes sense. Because that's one way God disciplines us, educates us, is by through our children. Here's a bumper sticker that I totally agree with. My children save me from toxic self-absorption. My children save me from toxic self-absorption. If I am absorbed in myself, my children aren't being raised and disciplined right. So let God use that in your life for you, but your children are an assignment. They are an inheritance. It's not just like, you know, you get them, you don't have any responsibility, and you guys already know that. But I thought that was an interesting take on that word gift. The funnel idea. The class we took had this great illustration, and it had a funnel. What do you guys use a funnel for? Okay, so how do you position the funnel? There's a small end and a big end. Where does the big end go?
Small end down.
Small end down, that's right. And then you pour your oil in. All right. Well, in child rearing, it's opposite. You turn the funnel upside down, and so what does that mean? Well, you got the small end, there's little freedom. There's a lot of law, little freedom. So when your children are young, there's a lot of law and a little, not very much freedom. The younger they are, the less freedom they have. As you go down the funnel, the smallest part's at the very top, and it gets a little bigger. And then eventually it cones into this really big part where there's a lot of freedom. The really big part, a lot of freedom, is when your kids become young adults, teenagers. Because in real life, and I think I have this later, in real life, there's a lot of gray area. And there has to be a lot of discernment. And your kids have to start learning that when they're young adults, not when they're out of your home. When they're young adults under your supervision. But when they're little children, they're up here at the top of the funnel. And you got to have a tight rein on them, if that makes sense. I thought that was a great illustration. They had some words that went, and I couldn't find the illustration online, so I just put it up there to remind me the funnel idea. Andre's handout we already referred to. I did want to point out some things. Now, I'm going to let you all read most of this, but I'm going to read some of it. So most important things to teach your kids first-time obedience, and I would add the word happy first-time obedience. Most of my kids were first-time obedient. I can't say that all of them were happily first-time obedient, but they can learn that. It's just like learning the banjo. I'm slow, but I'm getting better. You know, they'll get better if you keep working with them. Andre has some points there on that A, B, C, D. One of them is pray for each child by name in the morning. And I wouldn't say his culture is exactly like ours. When you read through this, you'll be going, he did that? Anyway, I want to highlight at the bottom of the second page, and it's in capital. It says, the parents also must be healed from their wounds taken from their parents in order to raise godly children. So that is something that he's discovered in his culture, and I think it's in our culture too, and I don't know that we've discovered it where we really deal with it. There's a lot of wounded people, and we're trying to disciple them. And if we don't help them get over their wounds, then, you know, they're not going to be complete people. And he gives some ideas on what, and these are his ideas. I just copied and pasted them from a newsletter he sent me. These parents love their children, but they didn't know the right way to raise them. Dominating parents get depressed children. Permissive parents get discouraged children. Negligent parents have children that don't have personality. Loving and firm parents have joyful and obedient kids. Quarreling parents, fighting, you know, mom and dad fight in front of each other, they have depressed children because they're scared. And that's one thing that the couch time, it's not that you should never disagree with one another in front of your kids, but they ought to see you having loving time together because that is their whole world. If you guys break up, they have nothing else. And it's scary. It's scary to them. Hang on to that. We're going to look at it some more here in just a sec. as your kids grow and they get older, the funnel is going to get bigger and you're going to transition into more grace-based. And what I mean by grace, I mean that you're not going to be using the rod anymore. You'll have natural consequences that you've set up, either grounding or, I mean, there's all kinds of things, but that's a different workshop from this one. But just be sure you make that transition. Matter of fact, there's a lot of gray area, and a guy used a verse yesterday. I thought, ooh, I'm going to add that verse to mine. Steve Presswood used it in Hebrews 5:14. But solid food is for the mature, who because of practice, there's that word practice again, have their senses trained to discern good and evil. So your kids need to grow up and be able to discern the difference between good and evil, or better, best and better, best from good. See, so there could be a better, but they have to have wisdom to do that. And the rod, when they're children, is what drives out foolishness and gives them wisdom. And then they need practice as young adults, making decisions under your supervision, so that they can discern good and evil and make, because you want them to grow up to be adults who make good decisions for themselves, for their families, for society. And that's the goal. Yes, sir.
You didn't touch on restitution.
Oh, I am going to touch on that on the next one. So you're going to be more of a coach when they get older, and you're going to, and they just need to understand they get older that with freedom comes responsibility, and that goes for everybody in any society, because the founding fathers, you know, these days we have left versus right, conservative versus liberal, but the founding fathers had two thoughts. You're either going to have tyranny from some government, or you're going to have anarchy from no government. And they wanted in the middle, where you didn't have anarchy or tyranny. You had a limit on the government, you'd have laws to keep from anarchy. So that's the idea between freedom and responsibility. So we want the maximum freedom, but we do have some responsibilities, and your kids need to realize that too. They have responsibilities. So there's the personal stories here. My wife and I sat down and we talked about it, and she typed a bunch of stuff out for me. We both kind of reminisced on what we did. So I have two parts here. I got things we did right, and then things that we struggled, we weren't successful in. So ideas from Doug and Doris Reed, if you want to turn over to that. I'm just going to go through a few of these. One thing that we did is we talked openly of our Heavenly Father. He was involved in our life. We had prayer together. We had Bible stories together. I don't think I did that enough. I wish I would have done more of the Bible stories and Bible things, although we did a lot more than the world would ever do, or like if you go to a normal church member, they're raising their kids in a worldly way. But I wish I'd have done more of that, honestly. And my wife is so good. She has very deep conversations with most of our kids. And even the ones that are not doing as well, she still has pretty good conversations with them. One thing we did is we worked on our kids having good relationships with each other, and we did not let them fight, and we did not let them say bad things to each other. And my kids love each other. I mean, if you saw them, they just... Matter of fact, my oldest, Dawson, left for college, and my youngest one, I mean, honestly, he's just shut down. I mean, he just, I never get much out of him. And when Dawson comes back home, walks to the door, he just pipes up. I'm like, Dawson, maybe you don't need to go to college. Maybe you could stay here. So he's having a hard time with it. He really is. And that's because we, as young children, we did not let them be mean. That was a spankable offense. Rennie was talking about the difference between, what did you say? How did you put it?
Restitution.
Yeah, so words are important, and the English language doesn't have the most words in the world like the Greek language did, but there is, I'm sorry, and will you forgive me? I'm sorry is for accidental things. I didn't do something on purpose. I'm trying to think of a good example of something that somebody would do accidentally.
Spilled milk.
All right, that wasn't on purpose, but it was something that made Mom had to clean up. So you can easily say, I'm sorry, Mom, could I help you? Or if they're too little, but you need to learn, teach them to say, I'm sorry. But if they do something on purpose because they're angry or they kick their brother or say something, then they don't need to say, I'm sorry. That's, will you forgive me? Will you forgive me? Because that's an issue where the other person needs to hear that. And that's something else we learned in that parenting course. And I have the information on the... I thought someplace in here. I definitely have it on the PowerPoint. Again, email me and I'll send all that to you. Yes?
You know, in the fighting area, one thing that I've run into is, you know, one kid hits another, I start trying to figure out what's going on, and it gets sometimes to figure out who's telling the truth because their stories are so different.
Yeah, his question is, when they fight, he's trying to figure out who's at fault, basically, or what happened. Or so at our house, pretty much, if two people fought, everybody got a spank. I don't care. I don't care if you were the victim. You better be a peacemaker because you're going to get it too. And they knew that. And so oftentimes you'd walk in and you thought you heard them fighting. It's like, oh, no, there's no fighting in here. And they're all playing nice. I'm like, okay. I thought I could have swore I heard fighting. And they catch on pretty quick that it doesn't matter whose fault it is. You're just not going to fight in our house, period. I don't care if you're the victim and everybody's ganged up on you, you're getting it too. And that really, anyway, it helps them. Okay, who's the best, who do you become best friends with? People who you have a common enemy of. Well, guess who their common enemy is when it comes to when I walk in the room, they're all of a sudden best friends. There's no fighting in here. So I think that really does help if you just make that rule and it's clear to them. And then you, yeah, so anyway, that's the way we kind of dealt with it. Yes, sir.
As far as that goes, but I've heard that line of thinking before in my struggle, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm trying to understand more. My thought with that is it teaching that kid, if he got in trouble when he didn't do anything wrong and he got disciplined for it, is that...
I guess you have to define, did he do anything wrong?
Yeah, I mean, but all right, same concept. I was at a school and way up in the panhandle of Oklahoma, and they'll give a SWAT to the kid.
Right.
One kid comes in and he's minding his own business, not doing anything wrong, and you know, one kind of jock kid comes in and throws a kid against a locker. The guy says, I ain't taking that, comes up impossible. I'm not going to take your crap. Well, they both got a SWAT. I kind of have a little bit of a hard time. That kid was just defending himself.
Yeah.
And so that's maybe I got.
I think first of all, you need to start really young. I think on this kind of thing, you need to start as young as possible. The older they get, the older your kids get, the closer they get to puberty and adulthood, the less that the rod drives out foolishness. Yeah, kids being spanked in high school, that's a whole other issue.
So I
see your question. I don't know if I have an answer to it. You're going to have to figure out in your family. Please do.
You know, if you watch football, it's not the guy who does that. The guy who retaliates, the receivers are going to get, right? So we might not like it emotionally, but that's where real life is. That's what's happening in the world, right? Retaliator, the guy is home, he's only defending himself. Well, yeah, but the world's going to punish him. So you might as well teach the kids to not fight.
Yeah, it worked in our family. It did work in our family. And I know it worked in John Mann's family.
That's exactly what happened. An example is, well, first of all, what did Jesus teach? He taught, you know, you don't strike, you know, non-retaliatory. Love your enemies. The second thing is, I sat in a jury, and it was a trial for a guy who had stabbed his girlfriend. Well, the testimony indicated that she pulled a knife on him, tried to kill him with the knife. But he was stronger, got the knife away from her. Once he got the knife away from her, he stabbed her because he was angry. Guess who went to jail?
No doubt.
No doubt. Because, as he says, this is what it, you know, it doesn't seem fair, but this is the way it happens.
I guess
now, if you're teaching what Jesus said, Jesus says, love your enemies. And
yeah, love your enemies. That's a good verse.
Doug is kind of aiming at is your siblings, your children, you're trying to learn to relate. That's a hard lesson to learn, but as adults, it's even harder.
But the problem I have with that, I'm young as five kids, we were homeschooled our whole time, raised in church the whole time. I grew up with that, and the downfall that I saw in my life. Because I was trained to be walked over my whole life. And I didn't gain headway in life and in interaction with people until I learned to stand up for myself. So I think it's probably, like I said, it's probably an issue.
Well, and there's a lot of emotion in child rearing.
Falls into the category of healing. You just have to heal some of these
don't want to make the same mistake speculation.
Yeah, so that'll be something.
Well, you don't want to go too much in the other direction to compensate.
Right. I mean, it's typically, you know, that you don't have to strike. Not in, you don't have to strike. I've got to, you don't have to strike. And I mean, it is the first notion that you want to strike when somebody is attacking you. But there is other options.
Anyway, you want to teach your kids not to fight, and that's kind of what we did. But you guys are going to have to figure out in your family, read the Bible, and kind of figure out how you are going to, because there's a lot of ways to do this. But that was effective for us, and I know other people, too, did that. So, yeah, there's a lot of emotion in child rearing. It's one of the harder classes to teach because there's a lot of cultural differences. There's a lot of wounding from when you were growing up, and... But, you know, be faithful in God's word. He'll help you. He really will. And pray and be serious about it and be willing to admit when you're wrong. Family identity, something that we spent big bucks on. And I did not make a lot of money as a teacher. I make more now because I've been doing it for a while. But we always took a family vacation together as a, you know, as a team, so to speak. And I think that really helped our family identity. It helped our kids love each other. It gave us some things together so we like each other still. My dad's here at the conference. He's been coming for quite a few years. My mom's still alive. We still do family vacations with, and my brother's here. We just went to, I can't believe I talked my parents into this, but we took everybody to Gulf Shores, Alabama over Christmas. I'm talking on Christmas Day, we were down there. And, we all split the cost and got a big, and it was a great time. So I would encourage you to find some things that you could do, that you could afford to do together as a family. I think that'll give you some bonding that is important. We used to camp a lot at first. That's because we couldn't afford to buy. I was so glad when we one day got enough money we could actually get a condo. I'm like, oh, I hope we can keep this. Thankfulness, train your kids in thankfulness. My kids, to this day, even if they're mad at me, when I talk to them on the phone, they say, I love you. They'll tell each other, I love you. They'll tell their mom, I love you. And that, just because we worked on being thankful and saying, I thank you and I love you. And John Mann brings this up from Proverbs 31. It says, her children rise up and call her blessed. Something I told my kids, bless your mom. Bless your mom. They don't have to rise up and say, blessed mom. But be thankful. Say, I love you. Be appreciative. And I worked on that a lot with them when they were younger. Okay, something we did starting when they became young adults, and I would recommend you guys do this. I took the boys out, my wife took the girls out, and Campus Crusade for Christ, Family Life. Family Life has a program called Pathway to Purity where you talk to your kids about sex, and it is phenomenal. It costs a little money because they want you to take them out and do something fun. So we always ask our kids when they were 12. We didn't do it till they were 13. We decided our kids at 13 would become young adults. But at 12, we start talking about it. All right, where do you want to go? What's your favorite thing to do? And so we'd take them to a hotel, and we'd spend the 3 days, 2 days. I think it took 2 days to go through, but it included some fun time. So Family Life, and I don't think I included that on my list of resources. I just now thought of it. But if you look up Family Life on Google, it's called, if you want to write it down, it's called Pathway to Purity. And they got everything. They got the CDs. They've got the booklets. They've got, I mean, it's just self-contained. You just follow. I'm like, yes. Because my parents never talked to me about that kind of stuff because they didn't know how. I mean, it was very private for them, as it should be, but it just wasn't talked about. So I even tell my unsaved workmates who have young children about it, and I don't think any of them have ever done it, but they at least have that option. Questions? I mean, that was a great question, by the way, and I appreciate your all's questions. That helps me to kind of figure out what to say. But again, a lot of this is you're going to have to pray through it. It's work. It is work. You're going to be tired by the end, but it's okay. You're pouring your life into your kids, and there's reward in the end. There really is. Yes, sir.
Just to tag on that and discuss a little bit, I think there's value in teaching them to figure out how to work out their differences on their own, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what you're at. That's what your goal is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to see the conflict, not because it's not okay to have conflict. It's because you guys need to figure out how to...
Yeah, don't say ugly words to each other and don't hit each other.
But there might be an age where it's too early to let them...
Yeah, maybe.
You know, if your kids are...
You know, if you got a 4-year-old, push your 1-year-old down. I mean, you wouldn't spank the 1-year-old, obviously. But as they get older, I mean, you're going to figure that out. Again, you know, the Bible doesn't have black and white on this. It has general guidelines. It could be. Could be. Well, eventually you're going to have to. But my kids, pretty much when they got to be young adults, they still didn't. They had disagreements, but... some things I really thought were important. I'm trying to look here. Spending the night. When your kids get older, like 8, 9, 10, they're going to want to start spending the night. That was one thing I think that one of my children that's having problems, one reason they have problems is because I let them spend the night with some people I thought were good people. Maybe the mom was, but I think the family was kind of very dysfunctional, I found out later, and she had some harm from that, just from things she saw, heard, and I think they probably talked bad about us because we were too strict of a Christians, because I was trying to raise my kids biblically. So I'd be careful about letting them spend the night with people, I still let my kids spend the night now, but I wish when they were younger I wouldn't have. Honestly, endorse, put something down here. You might want to encourage your children to have their friends over to your house if they're going to do that. So that's just an idea, all right? That's just an idea out there. That's something that I think we didn't do right, that I wish I could do over when they were younger. So anyway, that's something to consider. Again, these aren't hardcore values. These are just experiences I've had, and you're going to have to figure out what God tells you to do.
How do you deal with that if you feel like disappointment is? As a father, how do you deal with
that? Well, first of all, I think there's some verses in Ezekiel that says, the sins of the father, he will die for his sins, and the sins of the sons, they will die for their sins. That's not exactly how it goes, but that whole chapter 18, once your kids become young adults, then shame on them for the decisions they're making. Now, I'm supposed to be helping them, and I am, but... they eventually become responsible for their own sins. Now, when they're little children, it's shame on me because I'm not disciplining them enough and trying to, you know, working on gaining control of their life, if that makes sense. Again, it's hard to deal with sometimes. And I think, and the older I get and the more I read the Bible, the more I'm thinking, well, I don't understand half as much as I thought I did when I was younger. But there's a verse in 2 Timothy that says, women shall be saved through the bearing of children. I don't know what that verse means. But somehow women, I can tell you what it sort of means. It means that somehow women are very tied into their children. And they'll have to be careful that they don't make their children their idol. But they're very tied into their children. And so I think they get hurt even more than the fathers do sometimes because of that close connection they have. So, yeah, good question. Again, I look at it. I was talking to a coworker at school, fellow teacher, and I was just telling her about some of our experiences. And she says, "How do you deal with that?" I'm like, "Well, because she's a Christian lady." I was like, "Well, because I know God, I can say thank you, God, for helping me. And I mean, this is discipline for me, education for me, and I need your help with this child. I need faith for help." And so it's been a faith builder. It's not been easy, but we have high hopes and we have faith that God will work. So I told her, I don't know how people without faith deal with stuff like this because they deal with the same thing we deal with. Paul makes that very clear in 2 Corinthians that we're earthen vessels. I have it memorized, but I can't get it started. I don't know if I can find it, but it's an interesting verse just about.
Corinthians 4:7.
Yeah, can you quote that for me? I can look it up.
Earthen vessels. That the surpassing grace may be of God and not of
our. Everybody's getting crushed. When we get crushed, guess what happens? We don't die. We don't... The light shines through. Not that we're not discouraged. People know, I mean, but it's just a different... When you're really a believer and you're trusting in God, there's a different response, and the world looks and goes, How do you deal with that? And that's where we can shine and say, well, I think most of that's about, oh, computers. All right. So my oldest, we barely had computers. The internet was invented or something. I don't know. Anyway, my youngest, so we got filters on our computers, all of them, that filters out all. There's ones you can pay for. Again, I don't have resources on that. You could Google it. But Microsoft is the one I use now, and it's free. Microsoft Family Safety. It's built in. To do that, you have to have separate accounts for everybody, and it keeps up where they go. You can even program it to say, computer goes off at 9. You know, they can't sign into their account after a certain time. Well, I would encourage you also to get some kind of filter. Again, Microsoft has a good one, I think. It's not perfect. None of them are perfect. We did get one from Family. I can't think of their name now. But you paid like $9 a month for it. But it was so strict that you couldn't even get to things you ought to be able to get to do schoolwork and things like that. I can't think of the name of them. Family. It's Family. Don Wildman. Anyway, look up Don Wildman. Write that name down. And they, I don't even know if they still have it. They might. Consistent dates with each child. Doris doesn't feel like we did that very well, and I don't think we did. Although we did have dates, I did have dates with all our children. And then she feels like she didn't. And I think this is a, I don't think we trained our children very well when it came to chores. That's something that you, it's good if you can train them. In our urban society, see, I grew up on a farm in rural, and I always had things I had to do because the farm, it just had to be done. Well, my son, what is there to do on a half an acre of ground? I'll mow the lawn every once in a while. There's just not that much to do like there used to be. So my wife's mantra is keep my kids busy and productive. I mean, where she got that from, but busy and productive. So that's a challenge if you live in an urban environment to keep them busy and productive. Otherwise, they're on computer or Xbox or whatever all the time, and it's difficult. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Question on discipline. I feel like sometimes I'm with my son, his name is aptly named Caleb, very strong though. I feel like I'm catching him doing wrong a lot. And I just wondered if you had any comments or suggestions or ways to train him.
Yeah, and some kids are more of a challenge than others, no doubt. And you're wondering why, God. And I mean, if you can catch him, and that is good. That's a good point, praising kids when they do well. That is another form of training. Because obviously, if I get praised for something, I'm like, oh, I kind of like that. I'll do that some more. So, how do you catch him doing that? I mean, you have to work on it.
Do you have any suggestions or comments? Are you guys celebrating anything? Or just curious?
You know, anybody else have any ideas?
I have three girls, two in the 20s. Two in their 20s are putting a candle on the shelf. Everybody has a thing. Our 10-year-old, I mean, that's where I run for our money. Just like cleaning the room. My definition of clean and her definition of clean is two different things. And I was raised under a furious mother. This has been a real tough transition for me. I've had to bite my tongue and walk away many times, but what God through prayer has revealed to me is that thing where you acknowledge that she actually did something. And you praise that. I'm glad you did. She actually did it, and you actually put it in the correct spot. Can you do me a favor? Can I get you to move this over to here? You know, it's one of those deals where I've had people bring her in where, okay, we're a team now. You know, and it's also helping her to understand, okay, if I move that over, then that's also helpful. You know, as well. And it's one of those things where I've had to take one woman at a time. But, you know, and she's also the one that, if we go to Walmart or something, she wants to touch everything. I don't know how many times when she was a little baby, we'd have to talk real hand, talk real hand, talk real hand. She still touches everything. But the family gives her money for no reason whatsoever. So we have learned here in the past 2 years, get your purse, bring your money. You know, you've got a chance to shop, and there may be a chance where you're going to buy something you didn't even want, you know, because you might break it.
It's one of those deals. Some breaks, and we're not sweating bullets. It's not breaks. You know, and it's one of those where we're penalized by her own pocket. You know, once they start understanding money, and I'm a law dog, so, you know, everything is penalized financially or some way or something. So, it's, I mean, parenting is flying by the wing, but, you know,
seems like it sometimes, it really does. I mean, anyway, remember, you have a relationship with your Heavenly Father. Pray, ask for guidance, ask for help. You got His Word. But bottom line, parenting's work. And it's hard work. And sometimes it seems like you're getting nowhere. But have faith what God says, because it will drive out foolishness if you discipline them and work with them every way you can. Question?
Another comment. My wife is really good about this kind of thing. Like, she says, like, as much as we set them up for failure sometimes, we need to be just as intentional about setting them up for success. Like, we'll do it unintentionally, but if we can set them up for success, an opportunity to raise, you're like, hey, will you go do this and take that extra second and watch if they're actually going to go do it? You know, like, hey, I'm going to lead you to do this. And pay attention. Like, I see that you reacted right away. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's good.
And wait to see what you're
Yeah, I think setting up training, just like you would train a dog, I mean, your kids aren't dogs, but just like you would set up an on-purpose task to train your dog, set up an on-purpose task to train your kid. And then if they do it...
John Deere talks a lot about discipline, but then whenever they do obey, be intentional and say,
yes.
Thank you, you know, I see that you obey, thank you for doing that. They get that pleasure.
Yeah, good point, good point. Well, as you can see, this is a lot to do, and I would encourage you to get in a course. If you can get in a course, find one. I have a lot of resources. Email me. I'll email them to you. Yes, sir. Last question. We got to go.
Not a question statement. Just one thing is we've been raised kids, and sometimes you have to give yourself a little bit of hard to find the right thing. Proverbs 29:17,
direct
your son, he will give you comfort,
but
also
the
life of your soul.
Yeah, so believe God's word. God's at work. Thanks, guys.